This is Health Matters, a podcast from Mayo Clinic where we discuss the latest medical advice, news, and research to help you live a happier and healthier life. My name is Kristen Meinzer. I'm a writer and journalist. And this episode, we're talking about cardio-obstetrics, the field of cardiology specifically pertaining to pregnant patients. We've heard stories about everyday people and celebrities facing heart issues during their pregnancy. Even famously fit women from Serena Williams to Beyoncé have experienced heart conditions during pregnancy, like preeclampsia and pulmonary embolisms. Unfortunately, these conditions can be quite common. Cardiovascular disease accounts for more than a fourth of pregnancy-related deaths in the U.S., and heart issues during pregnancy aren't just a temporary condition for 9 months. They're actually a predictor of heart health for the rest of your life. That's according to my guest today, Dr. Neeti Agarwal. Dr. Agarwal is a cardiologist at Mayo Clinic in Mankato, Minnesota, and Rochester, Minnesota. She studies and treats heart disease patients, particularly women, with an emphasis on prevention. Dr. Neeti Agarwal, thank you so much for joining us today. We are thrilled to have you here.
It is an honor and delight to be here with you, Kristen.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty, let's just start with the basics. What's happening to a person's heart as they experience pregnancy?
So pregnancy puts extra demand on the heart and the blood vessels of a person. The body increases its blood volume by 30 to 50% to support a growing baby. As a result, the heart pumps more blood every minute, leading to a higher heart rate as well. During labor and delivery, that adds extra workload on the heart too. The body experiences sudden shifts in blood flow and blood pressure, particularly during the pushing phase. However, after giving birth, the stress placed on the heart during pregnancy and delivery gradually decrease over the next few weeks, getting the patient back to the normal physiologic state.
So before delivery, there's quite a bit of strain on the heart. Does that mean someone's blood pressure tends to be higher during pregnancy?
Their blood pressure should not be higher when they're pregnant. The heart is amazing in terms of adapting to this higher stress. So the blood volume increases, the heart rate increases, blood pressure should technically remain the same.
What factors increase someone's risk of heart issues occurring during pregnancy?
So there are several factors that could increase a person's risk of heart issues. Any pre-existing heart conditions, whether it be valvular heart disease, any kind of arrhythmias, things people may be born with, certainly increase the risk of complications during pregnancy. Being overweight or obese, high blood pressure, pre-existing diabetes can increase the risk. Smoking, using alcohol, or substance abuse are big no-nos during pregnancy and before pregnancy as well, and certainly increase the heart risk. Advanced maternal age, and we typically define that in medicine as being 35 or older, also increases a mother's risk of heart disease during pregnancy. And then there are some more specific things like multiple pregnancies in one, like having twins or triplets. And anyone who's had a prior miscarriage or stillbirth also increases the risk of heart disease for subsequent pregnancies.
And when the pregnant parent is experiencing these heart issues, how does that impact the baby's health?
If the mother is not doing well, the baby is not going to do well either. High blood pressure, for instance, increases the risk of what we call placental abruption, where the placenta separates out from the baby. So it can lead to a lot of complications. Babies can be delivered earlier than they're ready to be. And ultimately, it affects not just the baby's health when they're born, but even their long-term health and has lifelong implications for the baby. And if they're delivered early, they don't get the maturation and the development that they need. And this can affect their overall long-term health, not just for the mother, but also for the baby's long-term health.
maternal mortality is on the rise, particularly due to hypertensive disorders and cardiovascular disease. What is driving this trend? Is it just diet and lifestyle? Is there something more going on here?
So there are several reasons that could be causing the increased trend of heart disease in pregnancy. One of which is the average age that a woman is getting pregnant at is now older. There's also some disparities in healthcare, and all of this leads to increased presence of chronic health issues, meaning before the woman comes to see their physician or provider for their first prenatal visit, they've already got some pre-existing health issues. Kind of why it's important to talk to your provider before you get pregnant and seek counseling and then decrease your risk of heart issues. It's also important to recognize the early signs of pregnancy related to problems both by patients as well as healthcare providers. Missing or delaying a diagnosis or these symptoms and issues can result in worse outcomes. The good news, though, is 84% of pregnancy-related deaths, though, are believed to be avoidable.
84%. That's a very encouraging number that things can get better for lots and lots of people out there if they pay attention to their health, if they go to the doctor as needed. Some symptoms of pregnancy, like shortness of breath, swollen ankles, those are also symptoms of health problems, it turns out. How can a patient tell the difference, though, between the two?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. So during pregnancy, a woman or patient can experience being very tired, some passing out spells or near passing out spells, chest discomfort, shortness of breath, trouble breathing, especially when they're laying down or bending forward, and noticing that the heart rate's a little bit higher and beating harder, or you feel it more often than not. These can all be normal signs of pregnancy. Pregnancy is a very stressful period on a mother's health. It's essential to know that when you experience these symptoms, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a problem with your heart. For example, when people feel like they're fainting, it could just be due to changes in blood pressure and blood volume, which, as we discussed, are normal aspects of a pregnancy. Shortness of breath and difficulty breathing when laying down might happen because the growing uterus is pushing down and putting pressure on inferior vena cava, which is a major blood vessel in the belly. Also, feeling one's heart rate more than usual could simply be because the diaphragm has shifted up because of the fetus or the baby, causing the heart to shift higher up into the chest. If you experience any of these symptoms while resting during pregnancy, it is important to talk to your OB provider. And if you've got prior heart disease, it's important to talk to your cardiologist or your primary doctor who's managing your heart disease. During pregnancy, it is very common to develop a murmur or experience swelling in one's ankles. The murmur, again, is due to increased blood flow going through the heart. 90% of women actually often have a murmur during pregnancy when they did not have one before and then goes away after delivery.
What exactly is a heart murmur?
Heart murmur is just an extra sound your valves are making, the whoosh-whoosh sound that the doctor is able to hear when they listen with a stethoscope, because there's more blood flow going through the heart valve, or because the valve is leaking in the wrong direction or is not opening quite well. In pregnancy, like I said, most of them are just because there's extra blood flow going through the heart. And only your healthcare provider can determine if these symptoms are normal or could indicate a heart problem. And this is kind of why it's very important to follow up in the prenatal visits and during pregnancy with your OB doctors.
Got it.
I'll mention one more thing, that there's also some overlap between all these symptoms I mentioned and that of heart failure, where people notice swelling in their legs, some shortness of breath, and there is a specific kind of heart failure that occurs towards the end of pregnancy, in the last few weeks of pregnancy, or shortly after delivery, called peripartum cardiomyopathy, and it's important to catch that early. So if you experience these symptoms, don't ignore those. Make sure you follow up with your doctor.
Thank you.
pregnancy is a literal stress test on a person's heart. They're pumping more blood, their blood flow and blood pressure are inconsistent, especially during delivery. And that may be because of a myriad of factors, including heart and blood conditions, previous miscarriages, or history with substance abuse. That medical history can trigger an early birth and impact the baby's long-term health. Maternal mortality is on the rise, partially because of disparities in the healthcare system, and also because people are getting pregnant later in life, which increases their chances of having chronic health conditions. But how can a pregnant parent know if their symptoms are just regular pregnancy woes or something more concerning? It depends. So that's why it's really important to talk to your OB or cardiologist if you feel anything related to lightheadedness, chest discomfort, or shortness of breath. Now, let's talk about some of the specific heart conditions that affect pregnant people and what they look like. There's another term I'd like an explanation on. We frequently hear this word with regard to pregnancy and heart health, preeclampsia. What is preeclampsia?
Preeclampsia is a pregnancy complication characterized by high blood pressure and damage to the organ systems, typically the liver and the kidney. It usually begins around 20 weeks of pregnancy in women whose blood pressure may have been normal prior to pregnancy. Monitoring one's blood pressure is an important part of prenatal care, as blood pressure rising can be the first sign of preeclampsia. Other signs that patients may experience suggestive of preeclampsia may include severe headaches, changes in vision, nausea, vomiting, excess protein leakage in the urine, which every OB doctor would be managing, and impaired liver function test. When preeclampsia is not controlled, eclampsia can develop.
Hold on. Is there a difference between preeclampsia and eclampsia?
Think of it this way. Preeclampsia is before eclampsia. Eclampsia is preeclampsia plus seizures.
Oh.
So when someone's blood pressure is very poorly controlled and they've got some liver damage and kidney damage, then they can subsequently go on to start developing seizures, which is really bad for the mother's health and the baby's health. The challenge is often there are no symptoms or warning signs to predict eclampsia. It really can have serious complications, and delivery may become absolutely necessary regardless of where the mother is during pregnancy.
Got it. Oh, wow. And what does preeclampsia tell us about a pregnant person's long-term heart health? Does it have an effect on that?
It certainly does. So it increases the risk of future cardiovascular disease for the mother. In fact, women who've had preeclampsia have a significantly higher risk of developing high blood pressure, heart disease such as heart attacks, and strokes later in life. Women often develop heart disease at age 60. In my practice, I've noticed that when a woman has preeclampsia, usually 10 years after their diagnosis of preeclampsia, they may start developing high blood pressure and diabetes and even heart attacks. And that's 10 years after their diagnosis of preeclampsia. The average age of pregnancy is about 25 years or so. So that means at 35 years, these women may start developing heart disease. And studies show that 2 out of 3 women who've had preeclampsia may die from cardiovascular disease, highlighting the importance of post-pregnancy heart health.
Just to clarify something here, are we talking about causality, correlation? What's actually going on here with preeclampsia? Is it an indicator of things that are to come, or is it a manifestation of things that are already a problem?
That's a $1 million question. I think it's some degree of causation and some degree of implication. So the way I think of it, and I don't necessarily know if this is the right answer because we don't necessarily know what causes preeclampsia. Well, there's a lot of studies and research, and there's some growing evidence that women who have preeclampsia, even within the first few weeks of their delivery, actually have some degree of heart damage that has already started as a result of preeclampsia. This is not something that we routinely see in clinical practice with just a routine ultrasound of the heart. but there are some research studies that are showing that there are some damages. The way I think of it is pregnancy is a woman's first stress test. And a woman who was at some risk of heart disease, when they develop preeclampsia in my books, they fail their first stress test. And it's telling us, yep, in the future, as life stresses happen, there's a risk of heart disease and problems could happen. And then 10 years later, when we look, those problems have happened.
Okay, so it can absolutely be a predictor, but it could be also the manifestation of things as well. It might be a mix and match there, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Now, is there a way for the patient to just know on their own, these are symptoms of preeclampsia that I'm experiencing right now? Or is it not as obvious as that?
I wish it was more obvious. It isn't. Most patients I see in my clinic may not necessarily even know the term preeclampsia or that they have preeclampsia or that they have high blood pressure. It's just that their OB doctor recognized that their blood pressure was high and subsequently sent it to me as the cardio-obstetric specialist. And I've noticed that they have preeclampsia, which is where regular follow-up with your provider is really, really important during pregnancy. You can certainly also check your blood pressure at home, but there's no clear symptom. Most women with preeclampsia are actually asymptomatic. I would say very similarly with gestational diabetes, women are often asymptomatic. They may sometimes notice that they have increased thirst or they're peeing a little bit more often, but not very commonly.
And what about gestational diabetes? Can you tell us about what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So gestational diabetes is the onset of high blood sugar during pregnancy, which can pose an immediate threat to both the mother and the baby. While this condition usually resolves after delivery, long-term, there can be bad implications for the mother. If you have gestational diabetes during pregnancy, even if your blood glucose becomes normal after delivery, you may be 4 times more likely to develop diabetes. There's studies also linking that the presence of gestational diabetes also increases risk of cardiovascular disease, such as heart attacks, again in the mother. Nearly 1 in 4 women with gestational diabetes also have some degree of calcium buildup in the heart arteries later in life, even if they have normal blood sugars after pregnancy. Most women experience very mild or no symptoms with gestational diabetes. Symptoms may be something as simple as increased thirst or going to the bathroom, increased urination. However, left untreated, gestational diabetes can lead to very serious complications, both for the mother and the baby.
What kinds of complications are we talking about?
So for the baby, it may be things like excessive birth weight and early preterm birth, both of which can be quite bad. And sometimes we have to go on to doing a C-section to get the baby out. There is the concept or risk of placental abruption, a condition where the placenta separates from the inner wall of the uterus before delivery, and that is bad for the health of the baby. The baby can also develop serious breathing difficulties. In addition, with gestational diabetes, the babies may get hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, which can be bad and can ultimately lead to stillbirth.
And are there certain risk factors that a parent might have that would make them more likely to develop gestational diabetes during a pregnancy?
Sometimes, if there is a family history of diabetes, that I've noticed can be a risk factor for developing gestational diabetes. So that would be one. If a patient isn't eating heart healthy, is not exercising, is overweight, smoking, those would all be risk factors for developing gestational diabetes. And guess what? It's the same risk factors also for developing preeclampsia and eclampsia. So taking care of those risk factors is really important going into pregnancy.
It seems like it is great advice for people at any stage of life. Get some exercise, eat right, take care of yourself, don't smoke. All the basics covered for pretty much everything we talk about on this show.
Frankly, if patients did that, not just during pregnancy in their entire life, I'd be without a job and I'd be okay with it.
there are a few possible conditions that people should be aware of when they get pregnant. Preeclampsia usually starts around the second trimester. Symptoms include high blood pressure, headaches, liver and kidney damage, as well as impaired vision. Without treatment, it can develop into eclampsia, which includes all of the above plus seizures. Preeclampsia can trigger high blood pressure and diabetes later in life, which increases someone's chances of experiencing and dying from cardiovascular disease. Unfortunately, most cases of preeclampsia are asymptomatic. That's why keeping in regular contact with your OB throughout pregnancy is so important. Another major condition is gestational diabetes, the increase of blood sugar during pregnancy. Gestational diabetes significantly increases a mother's chances of having diabetes later on. Like preeclampsia, there are few to no symptoms that indicate the condition, and it also increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. Other risks include miscarriage, or a child could be born either prematurely or with excessive birth weight. And afterwards, the child could experience trouble breathing and low blood sugar. All of these diagnoses sound frightening, but they are preventable. The bottom line is that exercise, a heart-healthy diet, and smoke-free lifestyle before pregnancy can decrease your chances of developing these conditions or their long-term outcomes. We've talked about what to do prior to pregnancy, but now let's focus on parents who are already pregnant. And there's one demographic in particular that's at even greater risk of maternal mortality. Now, there's another statistic that is alarming for a lot of us. It's about Black maternal health. The fact is, maternal mortality rates for Black mothers are 3 times higher than that of their white peers. And about 1 out of 3 of those deaths is due to cardiovascular disease. What do we know about the root causes of this epidemic?
So, Black patients are truly more likely to have pre-existing heart disease and other chronic conditions like I discussed compared to their white counterparts. Black patients are also more likely to have adverse pregnancy outcomes, leading to increased risk of long-term cardiovascular complications. Additionally, a lot of Black patients, because of their prior experiences with the healthcare system, may not necessarily trust their medical community and their providers, and often may not be going to their healthcare providers for regular follow-ups, may not necessarily be taking medications, because again, that physician-provider-patient trust is not quite there. And then I think I have to acknowledge that there might be a component of structural racism and variation in the quality of healthcare patients receive that is still present despite everything we're doing.
So how do we lower these mortality rates?
I would say my approach to it is three-pronged: from the patient standpoint, from the provider standpoint, and the public health policy standpoint. From a patient standpoint, women are less likely to follow up, as I mentioned. And so it's important to make sure that trust, that relationship is there. They trust their provider and are going to follow up with their doctor. Do your part in showing up and following the advice of your provider. From a provider standpoint, you know, there might be some training and implicit bias training that we can do and be more culturally sensitive to our patients that come from a different culture and understand their perception and concerns with healthcare, because we want to build that trust for them to follow our advice. And then from a public health policy standpoint, it's important to expand coverage outside the postpartum period. So maternal health advocates often say that half of the maternal deaths occur within the first year of childbirth, and that's far greater than just the 60 days, which is what Medicare typically covers for maternal health. We need to be able to provide these marginalized patients with access to good healthcare to allow them to come see their physician, both financially, but also in terms of, you know, providing them paternal and maternal time off from work. It plays a crucial role for patients to actually be able to show up. I, in my clinic, also do a lot of telehealth visits because it's a young mom that's taken care of. Often they have a child at home, maybe a newborn baby, and it's very hard to arrange childcare to come see a physician. So I often meet them at that place while I don't have the option of going house to house back like we did in the day. We now have the option of doing it through telehealth. And then the last piece I would say is there's a lot of research and data that shows doulas actually work really well in partnering with mothers. When women involve doulas, they have a lower rate of preterm birth, they have less C-sections, they're more likely to breastfeed. And for those that may not know, doulas often offer non-clinical, emotional, and informational support during pregnancy, labor delivery, and the postpartum timeframe that can be really important to a mother doing well in the long run.
And what do you tell your patients to do to prevent heart issues before pregnancy? You mentioned earlier that we should be thinking about heart health not just during pregnancy, but even before pregnancy. What do you advise your patients to do?
I think seeking prenatal care early is going to be important. If you're planning on getting pregnant, we have the ability to do a lot of testing. We can make sure the patient is on a prenatal vitamin, get the vaccinations, reviewing medical history and health records, managing any existing health conditions going into pregnancy are going to be important. The healthier the mom is pre-pregnancy, the easier and better the pregnancy is going to be. Throughout pregnancy, it's going to be important to adhere to the same principles as outside of pregnancy for optimal heart health. This means, again, not smoking, exercising, eating heart healthy, maintaining a healthy weight. It is normal to gain some weight during pregnancy, but it's also essential to keep it within healthy limits. Getting enough sleep, which I know I don't always get, but getting enough sleep is a critical guideline and recommendation I would make. Aiming for 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night is what we usually recommend. And then having your heart team or yourself at home monitoring your blood pressure, blood sugar, the fat level in your blood are going to all be important. I'm going to take the segue to say I often receive questions about exercise during pregnancy. I would say if you were active before pregnancy, continue that same level of exercise. There's very few exercises that you should change what you're doing based on what you were doing before. Obviously, as the belly gets a little bigger, women are going to slow down a little bit. They may not be doing jumping jacks or skipping rope, and just follow common sense there.
What happens, though, if you do happen to be diagnosed with either gestational diabetes or preeclampsia? Let's say something like that happens regardless of how you take care of your health. What's the best plan of action then?
So during pregnancy, it's important for women to maintain regular checkups and address any risk factors. If the blood glucose or blood pressure is out of control, emergency C-section may be necessary. But that's where, if you have regular follow-ups, your provider may put you on certain medications to better control those risk factors or the preeclampsia or the gestational diabetes. Again, I'm going to take this opportunity to say these regular follow-ups should also go on into the fourth trimester. And that's the 3 months after delivery, where the healthcare provider, again, can monitor for chronic health conditions or monitor the blood glucose, monitor the blood pressure, make sure that those all come down, and refer the woman to a subspecialist if needed. Unfortunately, many women miss these postpartum visits due to barriers like either financial limitations or, like I said, the need to take care of their newborn baby. They're barely getting enough sleep, let alone to go to their providers. But that's where I think telehealth becomes important and when you can use that to your advantage.
So let's say a patient is diagnosed with preeclampsia. They had no idea. They have no symptoms. Should they be afraid? What do you tell them in that moment?
Short answer, no, don't be afraid. Use that to feel empowered instead. Preeclampsia is a big, scary word, and I recognize it can feel daunting. It is pretty serious in that if it's not managed appropriately, it can have bad implications for the pregnant mother's health during pregnancy, for the baby's health in the short term, and for the long-term health of the mother. But if you manage your blood pressure well and are following the lifestyle recommendations of diet and exercise, not only can you have a very good pregnancy, but more importantly, even down the line, the risk of heart disease is not a given. Part of the reason I personally got into this field of cardio-obstetrics was I was seeing all of these 40, 50-year-old women, and when I asked them if they had any complications during their pregnancy, invariably many of them had gestational diabetes or preeclampsia. And I wished I could have talked to them during their pregnancy or after pregnancy to say, let's keep a close eye on your cholesterol. Let's check your blood glucose every couple years. Let's monitor your blood pressure. Make sure you lose weight. Diet, eat heart healthy. Exercise regularly. What you're doing right now is not going to bode well, but now's the time to make those changes. By the time they saw me after their heart attack or after they were diagnosed with diabetes and high blood pressure and doing poorly at age 40, in some ways it was too late. And so to me, if a person is diagnosed with preeclampsia, it's not good, but use that to empower yourself and let's make changes together so you have a good pregnancy and more importantly, even a post-pregnancy adult life.
Oh, what a fantastic perspective. Knowledge is power, and we can turn things around with that knowledge.
Exactly.
Dr. Neeti Agarwal, thank you so much. This has been fantastic.
It has truly been an honor and delight to be here. Thank you, Kristen, for having me and to our listeners for listening to this podcast.
It takes a village to raise a child, but it can also take a village to support a pregnant person, too. When it comes to solving the Black maternal mortality rate, there's a three-pronged solution. Patients can follow up regularly with their providers and seek out doulas to help them navigate the process. Providers can take implicit bias training. And we can all advocate for a more accessible system through expanded maternity leave and extended insurance coverage after the postpartum period. On the individual end, if you're planning to become pregnant, there are prenatal care options like adopting a vitamin regimen, staying up to date on vaccines, and testing so you're aware of any conditions that could come up during pregnancy. And during pregnancy, it's important to maintain a healthy weight, get 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night, monitor blood pressure and sugar, and keep up your exercise routine. Unfortunately, you could have the best natal care, the best doctors, and still be diagnosed with a heart condition during pregnancy. It's especially important then to continue follow-ups into the fourth trimester and take any prescribed medication. It's crucial to know that a condition like preeclampsia or gestational diabetes is not a death sentence. Understanding your medical history can be an empowering first step to have a glimpse of the future and follow an alternate path to a heart-healthy life long after pregnancy. Okay, that's all for this episode. But if you've got a question or topic suggestion, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. We might even feature your voice on the show. For more Health Matters episodes and resources, head to mayoclinic.org/healthmatters. And if you found this show helpful, please subscribe and make sure to rate and review us in your podcast app. It really does help others find the show. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care and stay healthy. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.